You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
International desk.
All right, go.
The United States is seeing a surge in backlash to the Trump administration's policies, particularly those focused on undermining diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI, domestically, and the administration's foreign policy position on Palestine. Boycotts of companies aligning with Trump are gaining attention, particularly boycotts against Target for their quick abandonment of DEI policies, and an upcoming boycott against Amazon that is owned by billionaire Jeff Bezos, who attended Trump's inauguration. The grassroots organization People's Union USA has organized broader economic blackouts they say are spurred by anger at widespread government cuts. They say they aim to put financial pressure on corporations as corporate money controls politics in the United States. The Palestine-led movement, Boycott, Divest, Sanction, or BDS, has been operating in the United States in recent years, and targets companies who support Israeli apartheid or U.S. involvement in Israel. I spoke to University of Waikato senior lecturer in history, Chip Van Dyke, about the history of boycotts and the resurgence of this protest tactic against Trump. I started by asking if he could explain what boycotting is.
Yes, boycotting is a consumer-led movement where people make choices about where they're going to spend their dollars. So they're voting with their wallets, and boycotts, the underlying motivation could be anything from, it could be a political ideology, it could be protests over things like supply chains being related to modern slavery. It could be, you know, what they see is lack of corporate social responsibility. And this is a long history going back to, you know, going back to Ireland, even in the 17th century, the Boston Tea Party, the Montgomery bus boycotts in the South in the U.S. over racial segregation. But they're providing an opportunity for modern-day consumers to be able to sort of have a bit of a say and strike corporations where it hurts the most, which is the bottom line.
And can you talk a bit more about how we're seeing it today in the United States?
Sure. There's a couple different things going on right now. We're seeing a backlash against Target because Target was very committed to DEI, to having a diversity, equity, and inclusion program that was focused on their black consumers and attracting them by saying, we're committed to this. They were making commitments to donating to causes related to George Floyd's death, his murder. And then now they've turned their back on it. They're dismantling all of it. So there are Southern Baptist ministers down in Atlanta and other parts of the South that are basically reaching out to other Baptist communities and basically asking them to take what would be a fast for Lent for 40 days leading up to Easter, and saying apply that in a consumer context to Target, to say don't shop at Target. Instead, take your dollars and go to independently owned businesses, go to black businesses, put your money back into your community, and stay away from this corporation because they've turned their back on you. They clearly don't value you as a consumer, so why should you give them your money? And another example, too, is a backlash against Elon Musk and Tesla. So Tesla's share price has tanked. It's lost like 45% since the beginning of the year. But there was also an event called the Tesla Takedown, which was on the 15th of February, where people protested at Tesla showrooms and charging stations across America because people were objecting to what Musk was doing as part of his Doge campaign to improve government efficiency. And you know, here's this really powerful bureaucrat who isn't elected doing all these things that people are finding really objectionable. And they thought, I don't want my Tesla anymore. So it's not, I'm willing to say, okay, I might be committed to electric vehicles, but not by this producer. They're selling their Tesla. So the resale value has dropped. The share price has dropped. Sales are down, and that's actually not occurring just in the U.S., but across the globe. And the scary thing is that President Trump has come out and now said boycotts are illegal, that this boycott is illegal. And the Supreme Court has said otherwise. They ruled in 1982 saying, no, boycotts are protected by the First Amendment as free speech. And Musk has his own spin, which is that it's conspiracy, and that it's what the term is that gets used is astroturfing, which basically is when a an interested party with lots of money and corporate power basically represents itself as being a grassroots movement. So he's basically saying that this boycott of Tesla isn't actually a grassroots movement, but it's being driven by former hedge fund tycoon George Soros. So he's saying it's another billionaire basically just striking out because he doesn't like Musk. But consumers are turning around and trying to express their dissatisfaction with things. And if they don't have an opportunity to vote at the moment to express that, then they're voting with their wallet.
We've also seen boycotts with the BDS movement for Palestine. Has this gained much momentum?
I think that it is. It's moving along, I think, slowly but steadily. And this is similar in some ways to what happened with apartheid in the 80s, where there's this movement to try and get investors to divest themselves from ownership of Israeli companies and from doing business with Israeli companies. And there are some places in the U.S. where they actually passed laws at a state level that said you can't do that. You can't actually, you know, participate in the BDS boycott as part of the way you do business because it amounts to anti-Semitism. But in most of those cases, that's been struck down and said, no, that's freedom of speech. You're not allowed to do that. But in one place, which is in Arkansas, it was actually upheld, and the Supreme Court has actually declined to hear the case. So there's a little bit of a worry that things like this could provide a barrier to the effectiveness of the BDS movement. But because it's happening on a global basis, I think it continues to have an impact that will be sustained over time.
Can you talk a bit more about how successful boycotting has been in the past, particularly in the United States?
Boycotting is at its most successful when it's targeted. Specifically, it's great when there's a single product that gets boycotted in terms of being able to focus everyone's energy. So there's a certain level of collective psychology that needs to come to bear in terms of getting people the sort of stamina, if you will, to sustain the boycott. And so part of that, too, there winds up being a question about whether or not there's an easy alternative. So the easier it is for the consumer to say, I found an alternative that I can switch to, so that way it's not that much of an additional cost, it's not that much of an extra inconvenience for me to go out of my way and say, I'm deselecting this particular brand, I am switching to this other one because I'm not happy with corporate behavior. And unfortunately, one of the most recent successful boycotts was actually conservative backlash against Bud Light, which this happened because Bud Light sent Ms. Dylan Mulvaney a can with her image on it. And then Dylan wound up being sort of ad hoc spokesperson for the trans community and for, representing Bud Light as sort of a brand ambassador. And then conservatives came out in the massive backlash. There were pictures of people like Kid Rock, I think, was on YouTube with a gun shooting at cases of Bud Light to show, dissatisfaction. And so there was this massive boycott amongst, sort of alt-right conservatives to not buy Bud Light. And it cost the company $1 billion. So it did a lot of damage economically to the brand and then also in terms of the brand reputation. And what was really disappointing, too, was that they then turned their back on the trans community and on Dylan Mulvaney. And, she came out and said, this is worse than if you'd never been in contact at all, because it just shows that you're only about making the profits. You're not about actually supporting, anything. All you stand for is profit. But even though this was, going in a direction that was, I don't see it being particularly productive, it was, running counter to what we want to see in society, it does show that there is power in consumers. So again, it's a matter of trying to find a way to be able to sustain that boycott for a period of time. How you use it for people to work around going to a particular provider or a particular brand and switch to something else. And I suppose the last thing to think about, too, is that in terms of success, I don't think success is always defined in terms of the bottom line, in terms of how much profit did you get. It should really be thought about in terms of whether or not you've actually achieved any sort of change and whether or not you've actually raised consciousness in the sense that people are now paying attention to the issue more than they were before. So if it draws attention to it, it helps build, you know, from the ground up, that sort of groundswell of movement where people come together and say, yeah, actually, I didn't think about that before, but no, we should really be paying attention to, and then fill in the blank. And this happened with Nike and with child labor. And it definitely did have an effect in terms of changing corporate practice.
And have we seen any level of success with the Trump-oriented boycotts from the left yet? Or is it likely there will be success?
It remains to be seen. But I think the amount of media attention that's basically coming to bear is actually a positive thing. So the more that this gains traction, it winds up generating a positive feedback loop where, you know, people see that, you know, this is happening and it starts to gain a little bit of momentum and then it can keep going. So I think that even now, just the fact that there is more media attention coming to bear on the issues, and again, it's going across, you know, across the globe in different arenas for different reasons. There's boycotts in Canada of American products because they're unhappy with the way that the Trump tariffs are going and his attitude towards Canada. So I think that it actually is drawing attention in a different way that in itself winds up being a win because it actually shines a different light from the ground up rather than the top down, but from below, that people are actually seeing that they have agency.
I then spoke to Andre Farr, also from the Yale Daily News, for his perspective from the ground on these growing opposition movements, particularly the impact of these movements within universities. I started by asking what the political movements against Trump are that he's seeing build in the United States.
Well, numerous protests in opposition to the executive orders and legislation the Trump administration has implemented have occurred over the past few weeks, past month, since he's been in office. Beyond the global trade war and foreign political tensions in Europe, some Americans have been increasingly opposed to the work of certain members of Trump's cabinet. Protests outside Tesla dealers and vandalism of Tesla vehicles on the streets of the US signal a lashing out against Elon Musk's work in the Department of Government Efficiency. Consumers have also been boycotting certain American brands, including Target, for their role in removing certain policies in the diversity, equity, and inclusion area. So consumers in the US have launched a 40-day fast against Target to outline some of their involvement in these repeals. But other companies in the United States have also experienced significant backlash for their subsequent removal of diversity, equity, and inclusion policies in their employment and customer frameworks. Yesterday, in a press stunt for Tesla, Elon Musk and President Trump posed outside the White House South Lawn with a lineup of Teslas after Trump announced online that he would buy one in support of Elon Musk and Tesla. Trump also said that the vandalism of Tesla cars and dealerships is domestic terrorism. However, none of this seemed to help Tesla's bottom line as the company has experienced declining sales and slumping stock. Much of it is due to Elon Musk's politics. In the past few weeks, billions in aid funding to USAID has been stopped following its disbandment, and concerns have arisen for how this will affect communities, including health and social outcomes in areas that relied on that funding.
Are these movements against Trump's domestic policies likely to grow?
Well, protests will continue, and so too will their center of focus. The Trump administration is no stranger to protests, with his last term being embroiled in numerous protests and social movements, including the Charlottesville race protests and the 2020 George Floyd protests. However, Donald Trump has signaled a willingness to crack down on dissent and control politics in as many arenas as he can. And this has been very concerning for Americans, but people around the world as well. He has defunded and threatened legal suits over institutions and organizations that have presently or historically opposed him.
There's also been a lot of discussion about the crackdown on pro-Palestine protesters in the States. Can you explain what is happening?
Well, Trump signed an executive order in his first weeks in office aiming to crack down on protesters at universities across the country. The legislation aimed to target universities and students who failed to quash pro-Palestinian protesters are being punished, And with Trump calling the protest movements and encampment seen last year at universities across the US as, quote, anti-Semitic and, quote, anti-American. International students who were involved in the protests have been threatened with deportation, and universities who had protests and encampments during the pro-Palestine movements are now coming to terms with what this might mean for themselves and their students.
There has been a lot of vocal support for Columbia student protester Mahmoud Khalil, who is facing deportation. Why has his story gained so much attention?
Yeah, so Mahmoud Khalil has become the face of this pro-Palestine protest crackdown on university encampments, campuses by Trump. A man of Palestinian descent, he is a Columbia student who was a prominent and vocal member and organizer of the campus protests and encampments at Columbia University that drew global attention and political controversy. Last week, he was arrested and detained by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, more formally known as ICE, officials who broke into the student accommodation that he shared with his pregnant wife. This is despite Khalil having a green card. There has been widespread backlash for the actions of the Trump administration and its involvement in the arrest of Khalil. Protests have occurred outside the immigration facility where he was detained in New York City, but he has since been moved to another facility in Louisiana where questions of jurisdiction have arisen in his recent court appeal, because his court appeal is being held in New York City. This fight will likely center and continue on questioning Khalil's right to remain in the United States. And Donald Trump said that Khalil's arrest was just one of many to come. However, the ethics and principles of these arrests are going to be fought by legal challenges, undoubtedly.
Do you know of any students at Yale or other colleges who have been impacted by the Trump administration's crackdown?
There were two international students that were arrested in the original Palestine encampments that happened at Yale. Now, those that were arrested had court cases that were settled in state and did not get criminal records as a result. There appears that there might be a crackdown, but Yale has yet to have been a target of investigations by the Trump administration for anti-Semitic discrimination and harassment. More than 60 universities are being investigated at this point, but it appears that at this point, Yale students are largely protected. These investigations into universities continue while universities such as Columbia come to terms with really significant funding cuts. Columbia had more than $400 million in government funding and contracts cut, and more cuts are expected as outcomes from the Trump administration's investigations emerge from more universities. Universities are basically burying the hatches and are having to come to terms with what the Trump investigations and orders will mean for funding and operations. There's also an overt power play by Trump into trying to control the politics that revolves around American university campuses. And this is something that hasn't been seen before in previous administrations.
That was University of Waikato Senior Lecturer in History Chip Van Dyke and Yale Daily News' Andre Fawaso on growing boycott movements and other protests against the Trump administration's domestic and foreign policy.
International Desk on 95BFM.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.